So we finally got the sea slam and salmon.
You finally got the salmon.
Yeah, it's about fucking time. It was we've been covering it seems like forever.
I know.
But
I know. I'm psyched people are getting to see it finally.
Well, yeah, I mean it's so funny cause, and they actually make fun of you a little bit on the commentary because your style is it's definitely a different style visually and the way the way the movie looks and feels and. And they were making fun, you know, saying you're showing off with the fancy opening with the text up there. But that was one of the things that was really kind of interesting because, you know, for an outsider, we don't really know how you guys operate and what it's like. You know, a lot of you guys know all about all aspects of filmmaking, having done everything together. But it was really interesting to see what your visual eye would be like and how you would approach, you know, if it would just feel just like Super Troopers or something. But it definitely has its own feel. It's very polished, very... a little bit more kinetic, and I kind of want to kind of get into your head a little bit about how you approach directing.
Sure. Well, thank you. Yeah.
So, what was the Heffernan style?
Well, I mean, I think the big thing it was partly out of necessity in the sense that you know this is a different movie logistically because we shot it in one location. And it was very much like a stage play almost. And I think the important thing going in was for me, was to not make it feel claustrophobic or too sedentary. Right. And so it was kind of a jokey thing of like, let's get some action-y type feel inside this kind of you know set place. And so, you know, when I sat down with the DP or when we sat down with the, when we had to edit, the idea was to keep things feeling kind of kinetic and moving and kind of action-y a little bit. So it was definitely an intention to go in that direction. You know?
It works. It really does. It's because one of the things is like, you know, writing on the web, you get, you know, a very divergence of opinions when it comes to comedy.
Yeah.
And we have the broken lizard people that basically what you guys could, I guess to paraphrase your site, shit on a plate and we'd probably watch it. You know, but then there's the people that you have to sell them, you know, because they're used to either the stuff that's on TV or they have, like, you know, whoever, like, whether it be the Apatow style or the McKay style, whatever they're, like, caught up in. And you know, you show them Super Troopers to get a taste. And, you know, that's kind of raw and fun and it represents a time and place. And then you look at, you know, Club Dread, which obviously is stylistically different. And then Beer Fest, which to me, I guess, seems like the most mainstream to me.
Yeah.
But this one, there you go. But this one might be a really good gateway film, I think, for people that have yet drink the Kool-Aid.
Well, I think so, and that's kind of when we finished it, we kind of were feeling that way too, because it had a lot of different things that people can, I think, latch onto, and another thing it has, which maybe Griffiths didn't so much, is it actually has, you know, I think access to kind of, you know, female viewers. You know, it's like. Yeah. There are good female characters in this thing that they can appreciate, I think, and it moved a little bit away from the frat boy stuff, you know, and I think that's something that maybe would open the audience up a little bit.
Yeah, and it was cool because, like, in Super Troopers, I think the shock of seeing Brian Cox in that environment was the funny thing about having... You know, you've always had, like, Bo Paxton was, you know, great, but the thing about the other films, and Cloris Leachman being... an exception because she was just drop dead funny throughout.
Yeah, exactly.
But there's part of it is just like the culture shock of seeing these people that we know, in, you know, from different kind of films. But but Michael Clark Duncan holds his own in a way that I was not expecting. And I mean, that guy, I never realized the potential that guy has to be really fun.
No, I'll be honest with you, we didn't know either. And you know, part of the problem is like we wrote that part. Write that part, and then you're like, "Who can you go get to play that part?" You know, it's a limited field of guys who can be absolutely terrifying, and at the same time, very very funny, and be a boxer type of guy, you know. And so we weren't even sure, because you know, Michael done a lot of action movies, or you know, he did The Green Mile, you know. Mm-hmm. So you never see that, and I think for us, the only comedy thing we really knew him from was from Talladega Nights, and he was not certainly not the centerpiece of that, you know.
And Daredevil.
What's that?
And Daredevil.
Yeah, I mean, Daredevil. But So, you know, and so we kind of went into it and not really sure. And he showed up on the set and just started, like, drilling it. And you're like, Michael, what? I've never seen this. Like, what? You know, why? How come you don't do these comedies like this? He's like, oh, nobody ever asked me.
Yeah, well, it's got to be scary for a guy like him, though, because, I mean, you're kind of without a net, and if it doesn't work, and if he's not, you know, if he's not protected, it could really make him look bad.
Yeah, absolutely, and he was really concerned about that. That was his first you know, question to me. When we had our first conversation before he took the role, and he was definitely concerned. He asked around, you know. Bill Paxton called him up and said, you know, don't worry, these guys are great. You work with them. And he was doing that Roscoe Jenkins movie at the time or whatever, and he was friends with Monique, and he called him Monique, and he said, you know, I know you work with these guys on Beer Fest. What's the deal? And she said, oh, they're great. So we had people in our corner that made him feel comfortable. And then, you know, because on top of it, he'd never done an independent film before. You know, this is a low-budget private finance movie, and he's only done big studio movies. And so there's that. So he said, you know, Kevin, my biggest problem is whether I'm going to be protected here and whether, you know, my performance is in your hands. You make me look like an idiot or you make me look good. I said, trust me, Mike, we'll make you look good.
No,
and then he came in and he drilled it. And he was like, he was improvising. He was like, you know, bringing his own material to the table. And it couldn't have gone better, or it could not have been cast more perfectly in my mind, you know. For him to deliver that way.
Well, I mean, I don't know if you, I don't know enough about, like, back at Colgate or whatever, if you were filmmakers first, or if you kind of learned filmmaking as you went, you know, to service the comedy, but it seems like as filmmakers, you guys have come a really long way, and
I think we definitely learned. I mean, we started as sketch guys, and we didn't even know how to write sketches, so it definitely, you know, we wrote sketches, and then we shot little films. You know, the farther you go, the more you learn. I mean, Puddle Cruiser, our first 35mm film, you know, we didn't even know where to put the camera, you know. And now I think, you know, we get a sense of maybe knowing a little bit more what we're doing, I think.
Yeah, well, no, it's really good. And actually, the thing about your movies, and it's great because it makes people, you know, people like to watch them a lot. They're, you know, I can't tell you how many times I've seen Super Troopers and now Club Dread, which is now my favorite, like, you know, it's... It changes. It's like one of those things where, like, you know, like one's.
Yeah. I remember we were at the brewery. Was it you or was it your buddy who was like Club Dread's favorite one?
That was Justin. That was my buddy. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, that's the thing. It's such a weird hybrid that you can't tell people what, you know, like just a little tiny nuance is just like. It's like little shit that just completely destroys us at this point. You know, it's not the stuff that's necessarily even joke. It might be the stuff between jokes and just like little asides and all that. But for some reason, that movie has aged super. Like, really, really.
It knocks people off kilter a little bit when they watch it because they wanted to see me being Ron Farva.
Right. You know? Well, that's what's so great. I mean,
the more people watch it, the more people, you know, enjoy it, I think.
And I guess, I don't know if it's been a conscious choice, but you've definitely not played Farva again. Since, like,
yeah,
that,
yeah,
that kind of character.
Beer Fest, we kind of went close, a little bit back to that kind of
guy,
but it wasn't like that, yeah.
He was rough around the edges, but...
It didn't go as far as Farva. You know, I think it was good just mixing it up. I mean, that's the good thing about the Flam and Salmon is, you know, Jay got to play that really crazy character, you know, in the Flam and Salmon, and, you know, people had fun doing that, so it's good to mix it up.
Yeah, I really, it was good. It was a good side of Eric's to see this time too, because he's kind of like an everyman, and seeing him all cocky and gussied up is just funny because
he was such a straight man at Beer Fest. I think he was ready to do something. And when we were casting this thing, he was like, you know, I'd really love to play one of these kind of wilder characters. And so yeah, he went, you know, orange fake tan, blow dried hair. He got his ears pierced. You know, he totally went for it. So.
It really is great. It's funny that you have Will Forte completely not being I was waiting for him to become Will Forte and
yeah,
that was
it all builds up to his laugh, and that's the thing, because when we were shooting with him, you know, I think we shot him in 2 days and I think he felt he was being too dry, you know, and he wasn't comfortable with how dry, I think, and then we got to that his joke, and I think it comes across as it's working out well.
Yeah, it was, especially contrasting with Beer Fest, which is
where he was very over the top. Yeah,
I love the extended family you guys have put together. It's, I mean, I can't imagine what it must be like just hanging out, you know, and all that. But the stuff that, you know, you've got these people that you could. You know, and this seemed like this movie seemed to have a few more of those faces, like from earlier films. It was really nice, kind of homecoming, you know, to see some of the dudes from the first film, and Faxon from his tiny scene in Club Dread and all this. It's really good.
Yeah, it's really nice because part of it was because we shot the movie during the writer's strike, and so there are a lot of people who were available. The TV shows were dark, and everything was dark. You know, we were able to get Jim Gaffigan and Will Forte, and so it was good to go back. And then also just shooting in L.A., it was the first movie we shot in L.A., which is where most of those guys live, and so it's easy for them to say, come do a little scene. You know, when you're shooting in Mexico or New Mexico or wherever, it's hard to get, you know, budget-wise to fly your stable of guys down there. But when we were here, it was easy to get people to come up and do a little cameo. So that was the nice thing.
Now, was that a real restaurant, or was that a set, completely a set?
Oh, we built it, yeah, it was a set.
Because it actually looks like a restaurant, which is something you don't always see in movies, where either it looks like a palace, or it looks like it was thrown together. That actually looks like a restaurant.
Yeah, no, it's cool. We found this soundstage up in Van Nuys, and just went up there and built it in there. And I think that soundstage is usually used for porn movies.
There you go.
Like, I think when we moved out, we broke down our set, and they were building, like, a pirate ship or some Pirate of the Caribbean porn movie going in there.
Amazing. Amazing.
And so, yeah, this guy, Eric Schultz, who built the thing, he's my production designer, his background was in construction and in restaurants, and he put together this restaurant. It was great. It was a fun place to shoot.
Now, what was it like having to deal with the long delay in it coming out? And I know your fans, you have such a nice pipeline to your fans, and there was a huge set of blue balls about this movie, and, you know, the release wasn't what it probably should have been and all that, but your next film seems like you guys are going to be with Universal, is that correct?
Yeah, we're with Universal, yeah.
So it's a different situation.
We definitely knew that's what was going to be going into it, just because we kind of intentionally wanted to make this movie outside of the studio system, and then when you do that, the downside is you have to go find that distributor, you know. So we knew that we would shoot that movie, and then you have to wait for the proper, like, festival circuit run, and then get distribution. And so I think we knew it would take a little while. It took a little while longer than that, even just because, like, 2009 was such a horrible year for everyone.
Yeah.
Like, no studios were buying movies, and nobody was paying any money to put them out, you know, unless you had a major star. And so I think, you know, we hit a little bit of the kind of economic crunch, and then I think we were ended up being lucky to find, you know, Anchor Bay to be able to put it out for us, and so it ended up working out pretty well.
Yeah, and people are, I mean, video has been very kind to you guys. I mean, it's like this is like such a great. I mean, it's such a great place to reach people. I mean, it's what theaters were 20 years ago. It's almost like the business has evolved to a point where, you know, all what used to be considered ancillary markets is actually kind of the bread and butter.
Yeah, and even more so for us, you know, it's always been that way. You know, only certain people saw Super Troopers, Club Jet, or even Beer Fest in the movie theater, and it seems like the vast audience has discovered it on video. And, you know, I think hopefully it'll be the same with Flame and Salmon, but it just seems, I don't know, for some reason our movies seem to lend ourselves well to that market, whether it's, you know, people want to watch it all over again, or watch with a group of friends, or have some beers, or whatever.
I think we
play very well to that video market, so, you know.
Well, there's a subtlety to it, and there's also, yeah, it's not about the big setups and the big gross outs and all that. It's there's a reason that the people are so loyal, is because you know what you guys do is definitely unique, and definitely for people that it connects with, it's really, really a strong bond. And actually tonight I've got my really, really good locals here in Atlanta, we're going to be watching it, and it's like a holiday.
Oh, good.
It's like a holiday for us. It really is. I felt bad that I had to watch it alone, you know, because it's a group. They're group movies for sure.
Yeah, no, I think they are. I mean, I think they are.
Can I is there anything in terms of if you were to pinpoint like moments and all that, what's the stuff that gets you? Like what are the kind of scenes in the movies that end up like getting you personally? Because I can never, like, you're whenever I've done an interview with you, you're usually, you know, it's business. I mean, like, you know, it's nobody's cracking jokes and all that, but I can't pinpoint which of the jokes in the movies are the ones that are like totally get you, because it's, we have like, there are Heffernan people here, there are Soder people here, everybody's got the stuff that kills them. Like the scene where you go under the bed in Club Dread, and is that a fat joke? For some reason, yeah. Destroys me, and I don't understand why. But is there anything, yeah, that kind of any of the little things in there that are your babies?
Right. You mean like in Slam and Salmon? What are those kind of things, or what do I like?
Yeah, no, just the stuff that kind of like the little moments that kill you, like the stuff that, you know.
I love. Some moments that Michael Clark Duncan has that I love. I love that shit where he's like, if some butts was candy and nuts, we'd all have a Merry Christmas. You know that scene where,
yes,
he's like talking to that Japanese couple? I don't know, there's just something that always tickled me about that.
Yeah. You
know, that shit.
Well, and part of it is seeing him do it.
Absolutely.
It's like you have this,
and it's like,
bear of a man doing it.
Like, and not like him not winking to the camera or anything, like he's totally in the moment, trying to make these people understand what he's saying, you know. And it just comes across to me. I really just love that. I love those little moments that he has in there, you know. And I guess it's also a little bit of pleasure of that, you know, just the fun of getting someone to come in and do that material and do it in a way that you love is also a good thing. But I like that. I, you know, my favorite scene. Office when he has us all lined up and he's like, you know, rapping and he's doing,
yeah,
all that shit.
Oh yeah, that killed me when like he actually says something that rhymes and then he does the other thing and it's,
yeah,
there's almost a moment,
you know,
where
wrote
he
wrote out a bunch of raps and stuff for him and then he just went off and then you know, he starts like doing wiki
yeah,
like,
it goes,
oh,
just a little
God,
too long and it's priceless. You know, like how,
yeah,
he just digs and digs. It's really good. It's yeah. That was the big revelation, because when I see, the one thing I have to say is you guys, your trailers never do a good job of selling,
yeah,
what's funny in your movies. Like when Super Troopers came through, it was way before. I mean, it was early, and I saw the trailer, and I was like, I don't know if this is up my alley. And that's been the case with a lot of them. It's like, yeah, just don't judge them by the trailer. The movie's going to blow you away. Just, and I,
yeah,
is that,
and we try to figure that out. We sit down with the marketing people, and it's like, I mean, half of it is the rated R stuff. Like,
right,
half of it you can't put anything even close to any of that stuff into the trailers. That's part of the problem. And then the other problem is just whether it takes too long for a joke to unfold. For it to be that trailer moment, maybe that's,
yeah,
it. I don't know, but
well,
I think you're totally right.
Well,
like,
you guys aren't about big jokes. It's. I mean, like, because like that's the gimmick. It's like, because anything, if the little stuff doesn't work, or if everything else doesn't connect, then you're not going to want to see it again, or you're not going to be grabbed by it. But at the same time, I guess you can't just do a trailer that lists all your other movies and say, yeah, you'll want to see this. It's like,
right,
these guys have
right. Proven, they do. They do. They try. Yeah.
It's.
Yeah. No. That's.
Well, we have the other editor of our site, and I have this war kind of going on. He doesn't get you guys, and I, you know, it's almost like I almost want to take him out to pasture. But so what's
it's happened? You know, there's some people who don't, some people do. And
it just doesn't make.
And then it's nice when the people find you, like they didn't get you, and then all of a sudden they get you.
Yeah. Well, actually, the people that aren't whose opinion in film I don't tend to go to. Beer Fest connected with a lot of the people that are more kind of, you know, like that are the Adam Sandler crowd or whatever you'd want to say.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Not because it's the same type of movie, but it appeals to some of those same, you know, like base kind of things. But
yeah.
But then that's your entryway, and by God, I now they get Club Dread, you know. But now the next one is, now Rogue Scholars is the next one, right?
Yep. Yeah.
And
hopefully.
Okay.
We'll get the green light.
And you mentioned the less frat, like the slammer was less of a frat frat kind of comedy. It seems like this one's almost like taking that and kind of like the next step.
I think it spins back. The interesting twist on it is us playing college professors, I think. So you have this kind of like the kind of gist of it is, you know, these ivory tower kind of people who aren't necessarily always in touch with the world as it is because they're smart guys, enter into that world, enter into that college, you know, pranky kind of world. And so it's kind of, I think it's going to have this, I think it'll have elements of both of, you know, more intellectual stuff, and then at the same time you'll have that kind of more base kind of frat stuff. Because that was the intention, was to take Animal House and spin it. And, you know, if you took Animal House from the position of a college professor, how would that play out, you know? So it should be, I think it's kind of a cool twist on it.
As much as I would love to see another Super Troopers, I love the fact that you guys aren't, you know, I'm sure it'll happen at some point, but to me, it's like the box office admission alone is just worth checking in just to see who's playing what kind of a role this
right.
time around,
yeah,
or who you're going to distort physically, you know, or embarrass, as you know, like I guess Jay got the short straw, to some extent.
Jay showed his ass a lot.
See, you're covered for another 3 or 4 films after the powdered sugar.
I am. No, it's like, don't ask. Get some other people mixing up. But no, I think that's right. I would be happy. You know, we actually have been writing Super Troopers 2 recently because, you know, we've got an idea that we like, and we're actually a couple drafts in. And it's been nice. You go into those things and think you already know the characters, and there's something nice about writing that. But there's also, yeah, you're right. I mean, there's something nice about, like, laying out a whole new world for people. And the more you do that, the more they accept it because they've seen you do it a couple times, and they become more interested in seeing what you do.
Well, I love that you're doing it for the right reasons. I mean, if you know, it would suck if a movie tanks or whatever, then that's the go-to. You know, you see a lot of your favorite artists or bands, whatever, they'll have to try to go back to what made them work. But that's usually when they've exhausted themselves. But if it's your baby and you're steering it, and it's not, you know, it changes a lot of it. But if you guys, it's one of those things where it has to be a labor of love. It can't be anything but, you know.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, it's funny. Are you guys based in the West Coast now?
Yeah, we're in LA now.
Yeah. I was it's kind of like I was at a restaurant in Santa Monica, and we were cracking Super Troopers comments back and forth.
Uh-huh.
And the waiter comes over and he brings me a liter of cola. And it's funny, just like, because we were just goofing, and we weren't communicating with him, and it's how it seeped in. I can't imagine what it must be like to, you know, all corners that you guys have probably gotten it from in terms of people.
It's funny, like, you know, in the places that you get it. I was at Disneyland the other day with my kid, and then the guy tried to sell me a liter of cola at the stand, you know. It's funny, like just all kinds of different people that ended up loving that movie, you know.
And what was the story with the live shows that you were doing?
We did it was about 4 months. I think it was about 4 months last year. It came out of this idea that we hadn't been on the road and done live shows in a long time, you know. And it's something that we used to do. We used to do shows in New York City. And we went down to South by Southwest last year, and we did, we were talking to different people, and we did, you know, we introed our screenings and did Q&A afterwards, and like, we should go back out there on the road. And so we scoped out, and it turned out there was an appetite for it. So yes, we went around, we did about 40 cities over the course of the 4 months. And then in the end, we shot it, in January, we shot it as a concert movie, and they're going to air it on Comedy Central.
Oh, really?
In September, yeah. So September they'll have it on Comedy Central, and we'll come out on DVD, like an extended version of it.
Wow, is there a name for it, or...?
It's right now it's called Broken Lizard Stands Up. Because, each of us do stand-up, and which is it was a new thing and unique thing. So we do some sketches. On the road, sketches, we did like a Super Trooper sketch, a Beer Fest sketch, and then some original sketches, and then everyone did stand-up.
Wow.
And Comedy Central couldn't license the Super Troopers or Beer Fest stuff, so it's going to be mostly the stand-up part of the show.
Uh-huh.
But it'll be cool because it's something that people haven't seen us do before.
Did it influence the way you approached your writing process at all?
Well, I mean, in a couple of different ways, I guess, because, like, well, number one, it got us back on the road together, and, you know, you end up getting older, and you live your life, and you don't interact as much, or you're not forced to interact as much, and this was us in a van driving around doing these shows, and it allowed us to do a lot of writing, like Rogue Scholars and stuff like that, cult ideas, and so that influenced it in that way, and then, yeah, I don't know, it was just a very different kind of writing, you right. know, like, it was kind of like each guy individually wrote their stand-up bit, where usually what we do is a very kind of collaborative writing, and so it was very cool, because, like, when you first see a guy kind of trot out his material, you're like, oh, that's all, you know, something you were involved in, yet you are involved in, you know? Yeah. It's kind of a cool experience.
Well, that's, I'm excited, that's something I totally didn't know that was going to be coming out, that's really, really
yeah,
strong.
Yeah, so, yeah, actually, I think we just sealed the deal last week on it, so it's, we shot in January out here at the El Rey Theater, and we're just editing it together now, and we'll be done early June with the edit, and then, yeah, they're going to broadcast it in September and then release it on DVD.
Is there a time period where we should start crossing our fingers to hear about the next movie? Is there, like, a...
I don't know. You know what? We just had a meeting with Universal on the script. It's moving forward for Rogue Scholars, so... I think we're going to give them our latest script probably in another month, and then I think they'll make a decision on a timetable. So we're hoping it's going to be in 2010 we shoot.
Awesome. Well, you guys, your Twitter, you do a pretty good job with the Twitter stuff. I can't say you update nearly enough for the
No, we don't. We go in spurts.
Yeah. And it seems like a lot of times it's like just an opportunity to crack on one of the other guys or whatever. But
yeah, so that's the problem with Five Guys also, is like you point the finger at somebody else, it's like you expect someone else to do the Twittering,
right.
And nobody does the Twittering, you know.
Well, as long as there's a pipeline, because, we need to be able to share this info with people out there, because it's,
sure.
You know, it's free pub, you know?
Yeah.
So I wish you guys the best. I totally, very, very happy with the latest one, and it's...
Cool.
It's good to see a little bit of flash with the Broken Lizard guys. It's good.
You did
a really good job on lens. It's really solid.
Awesome.
Best of luck, man, and hopefully we'll get to talk to you again soon.
Cool.
Thanks, Kim.
Thanks, Nick. Appreciate it.
Take care.